Welcome on, everybody, to the Locked On Eagles podcast. This is the October 24th edition. I am your host, Gino Camilleri. Lou is taking the day off, and I'm not going to be alone today. I have a pretty special, we're not going to say guest, we'll say more of a co-host. His name is Tyler Steggy. He's one of my good friends. I've met him on Twitter, been around him for a while. So, Tyler, how are things?
Things are good. The Eagles are 3-4, so things could be better, but nice little matchup this week against Blake Bortles.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, we're 7 weeks into the season. I don't think myself or anybody thought we would be sitting at 3-4. Like, you saw that schedule when it came out. I honestly thought we were going to start the season 4-0, maybe to run into some hiccups and be at the bye around 6-1 or 5-2. I don't think anybody expected to be under 500 this far into the season. What do you think about that?
Yeah, same thing. You wanted to get out of the Nick Foles starting, at least being, well, first of all, we didn't know how many games, but I mean, losing to the Bucks was kind of eh. And then Wentz came back week three, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Starts out hot, and then you drop one to the Titans, which is, I mean, that's going to be that one. And then this past week, against the Panthers are the two that stick out to me. The Vikings, I mean, that's just a tough matchup. Their record doesn't indicate how good they are. And I mean, I think they've won three in a row. So that was kind of a matchup. It was in Philly, but that one didn't bother me as much as the Titans and the Panthers, giving up 21 unanswered in the fourth. Those two are really going to stick with me. But like we said, there's no better or there's not many quarterbacks you want to face when you're trying to turn things around than Blake Bortles. I think the Eagles match up really, really well against this team. So I think it'll be a good bounce-back game for them, or a good opportunity at least.
Yeah, that was a good preface. So on today's show, we're going to get started. Tyler and I are just going to chat up how we think the season has gone so far, where we're at, what's the state of affairs or the state of union, dare I say, of the Philadelphia Eagles this far into the season. In our second segment, we'll get into previewing that matchup that Tyler mentioned with the Jacksonville Jaguars across the pond in London. And then part three, we wouldn't be a show the week before the trade deadline without talking some trade. So we'll get into that stuff. But continuing on where we sit, 3-4, coming off an ugly loss. And Tyler, I want to get your opinion on this. There's a lot of people out there saying that the offense cost us the game and that the defense is ranked 6th in total points allowed and everybody has a statistic. It's just getting pretty crazy on Eagles Twitter. But where do you lie in that regard? I'm on the side of the fence that you can't really look at statistics without looking at them through a heartbeat almost.
Right.
Statistics aren't stagnant. It's, you can't just look at them and say, okay, this is the average. But where did that average come from? Does the amount of yards allowed come in the fourth quarter like we've seen? Do those points come in the fourth quarter? You have to put things into perspective. And I think that's where a lot of things are getting misconstrued in the media today, and it's kind of getting on my nerves a little bit. So I'd like to hear what you think about that.
I don't think you could put it on one unit. I was very passionate about after the Panthers lost, I kept saying or mentioning Jim Schwartz, and I was pretty much placing the blame on him. I think it goes both ways. I think Doug Peterson could be better. I think Jim Schwartz can absolutely be better. And I think skill position players can be better. I don't think Nelson Agholor has took that year four leap that we all expected. I mean, he played really well in 2017, and I anticipated him to be the number one target. But when Jeffrey came back, it's almost like he's been non-existent. Like you said, stats, you can't just put, they're only averaging, giving up this many points a game. So it's not the defense's fault. The Eagles lead the league in time of possession, which I think is a stat that you can kind of rely on. I mean, it says that the defense is not on the field much. So if the offense, I think the offense has been methodical, and I don't think there hasn't been a drop off compared to 2017. I think the biggest difference is there is no deep threat. They don't have a Torrey Smith. It was supposed to be Mike Wallace, and that is the, to me, in my opinion, the biggest injury that this team has faced. It was supposed to stretch the field and open things up for Zach Ertz and Nelson Agholor, and Zach Ertz is still getting his because he's one of the best tight ends in the league, but at the end of the day, you can't just expect to do a play action, and you see it too. You see this team trying to set up deep shots, but if you're trying to scheme a deep shot, it's so much different than scheming a deep shot rather than just having a guy that can beat you deep. And that's where Mike Wallace or a Torrey Smith come into play. They can just beat one-on-one coverage. They don't need a play action. They don't need a long seven-step drop. These guys are quick off the line, and they beat a DB. And the Eagles' offense is missing that. And I think that's where you see time of possession. I'm going to go back to that a few times today. This Eagles' offense is on the field so much because they can't – they're not picking up chunks of yards. They're it's almost like they're playing the chain game. They're trying to get into a second and medium, a third and short. And another stat – sorry, I'm kind of rambling, but it all
kind of
ties
in.
The third down percentage, this year the Eagles are at 39%, which is actually pretty good. It's the fifth best in the league. And last year, when they were tops of the league, it was they were at 41%. So it's a 2% difference. So it's not third down conversions. It's not that the offense isn't staying on the field. I think red zone has been a little stagnant, and I think Peterson could be better. And I think that also comes with Wentz's being comfortable. But at the end of the day, this team is just not getting any explosive plays. Who's a home run hitter? Let me ask you that. Who do you like? Who on this Eagles offense can score from their own 15-yard line? Who can score a touchdown with over 80 yards?
Yeah, no, I think you said it perfectly. I don't think there's anybody, and I think you've made a very good point saying that scheming to get a guy down the field is an excellent idea. But if you don't have a guy with the physical traits that can go down there and do it, you're SOL, really. I mean, you don't have a DeSean Jackson like you did back in the early 2000s. You don't have a deep threat like Torrey Smith like you had last year. You don't have Mike Wallace. You have guys that their skill set doesn't fit that. Agholor makes big plays downfield when they have a field-stretching guy that you can take the burden off of him, and he could get into the open field. So, like you said, you have to have somebody to do that, and the explosive plays do tie into that time of possession and that. You saw it in the Carolina game, that third quarter, they were basically on the field the entire time. And it's a good and bad. One, you're keeping your defense fresh and they're staying off the field. You're keeping their defense on the field. But at the same time, you're limited in the amount of drives that you're going to have. You're not in the Chip Kelly days where you have two-minute drives and you're putting up 30-some-odd points. Or even last year, you're putting up 30-some-odd points a game. You see it. We scored 17 points the last game. So I definitely think that has to improve, and I definitely think there's blame on both sides of the football. That's one aspect. And then if we're going to go into the time of possession argument, should the defense – they should be fresh in that regard, you know, when in the fourth quarter, when you're not on the field for 75% of the third quarter, you feel like your legs should be under you and you should be ready to go and ready to make some plays. That's just my opinion. And from when I went back on tape, there's some things that I really don't like about the defense. Jim Schwartz changed some things late in that game that really got on my nerves. He's really, his adjustments, I think, have killed him the most, but like
which
you said,
ones?
I don't...
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. He's a very hard-headed defensive coordinator, but you have to give some plus side to him saying that he does trust his guys, but at what point do you say, we can't keep putting a square peg in a round hole?
And you know what? And let me just hone in on that real quick. That's what bothers me is you're up 17 points, sorry. You're up 17 points. You're up three scores. And we've seen it. We saw it last year when the Giants came in and Eli Manning shreds this defense. So when like a quarterback is struggling, and then you'll see this defense kind of pull back and play soft and go back into their soft cover three or even a soft cover two. Mm-hmm. They're no longer, because what the biggest difference, and I'll credit Jim Schwartz here, is when we were in the first half of the game against Carolina, the corners, Jalen Mills, Ronald Darby, typically are playing 10 yards off. They were actually close to the line. They were actually trying to get a bump on these receivers. And then once they got that three-score lead in the fourth quarter, you never saw that again. And that's what frustrates me is quarterbacks are way too good in this league to just let them dink and dunk and get into a rhythm. And once Cam Newton got into his rhythm, and I'm not like during the game, I was like, man, the Eagles did this, the Eagles did that. Give credit to Cam Newton. I'm one of his biggest
MVP
criticizers.
2 years ago. He
did, and I'm a criticizer of him. I think he's severely overrated. But once he settled in, that he was like on fire. He was shredding this defense. And on that final drive, they actually went back to a normal base defense, and they weren't playing soft. And he went in and he led a game-winning drive. So you got to tip your hat to that. But that also plays into what Jim Schwartz did. He let him get into that rhythm. He let him find his rhythm. And it's just frustrating. You can't do that. These quarterbacks are way too good. And that's the frustrating part. So when he says, I trust my guys, do you really? Because if you trusted your guys, you wouldn't have been playing prevent. You wouldn't have been playing 10 to 15 yards off the line. So if you trust your guys and back your word up and continue to play that all the way through four quarters, don't play two and a half, three quarters, and then that's so frustrating.
I agree.
It's just irritating, man.
It is, yeah. And I said that, I tweeted it during the game. As soon as I saw them start playing 10 yards off, I'm like, why are these guys deciding to play off coverage right now? When at that point in the game, these coaches have been around the NFL long enough. They know that you can't play conservative, and I think the conservativeness compared to last year has exponentially grown. They are playing way more conservative than I've ever seen Doug Peterson play, and I think that's killing them. When you're starting to play 10 to 15 yards off, and you have good receivers who can run great intermediate routes like Devin Funchess, I mean, Torrey Smith, he's good in that regard. They'll take advantage of that any day of the week. Any good offensive coordinator is going to make an adjustment like that. And that's how you win games, is how you adjust. And if you want to say that sticking with your laurels and sticking with the way that you called the game all day and all season, and you're just going to change it when you're up and you want to play conservative, you're not going to win games that way. You have to stick with what works. And if you think going back to a base defense, which allowed pretty good amount of yards the past couple weeks, that really didn't help you. And then after the first time they went down the field, do you think he would have adjusted? Nope, didn't do that. After the second time they went down the field, do you think he would have adjusted again? Nope, he didn't do that. So I'm really putting this on Jim Schwartz. I know you can't completely put the blame on him, but if you look at this fourth quarter, any good team should be able to hold a team for 10 minutes to three scores. You look at the math, you run your 4-minute offense to get two scores, you run a 2-minute offense to get one score, but you should be able to get off the field and you should be able to hold them. 10 minutes is way too much time to actually be on the field. It just is so frustrating to see them up in these games and on 4th and 10, on 4th and 15, not trusting your cornerbacks to make a play. You know, yeah,
yep.
You trust
and you know
your
what?
Defensive
and it's funny.
Line to make plays all day, but why can't the cornerbacks go and make a play? It drives me crazy.
Right, and it's funny that you say that. That's how they lost the Titans game. Corey Graham
the exact same
had a breakdown coverage, and then Jalen Mills. And they were so close. I mean, if Brandon Graham gets there and Cam Newton doesn't make that ridiculous Superman throw, I mean, then the whole feeling and the whole vibe is different. I think it's ironic, too, really quick, how a lot of people criticize and kind of mock the Patriots because sometimes you'll see them up 21, 24 points and you'll still see them passing and just trying to go deep. And they're just, their foot is on the pedal and they're just not a doubt, not looking back, just trying to put points on the board. It's ironic that Eagles go up 10-0 and they get the ball with 2 minutes left in the first half and they decide to run the clock out. And it's just like you pride yourself. And this is where I don't think it's just on the defense. I think they could have been in a different situation.
Doug has some of the blame as well. I agree.
Absolutely. And that's where it bothers me is you say, you know, we want to be aggressive. And, you know, he does go for it on 4th and 1 sometimes when he shouldn't. But I typically always see it and I'm like, you know what, I agree with this. But how can you have that mindset but then you choose to pull back? What here's my thing is what's the repercussion? What do you have to lose if you do go 3-and-out? The Panthers have not yet moved the ball once in the first half. And you're deciding to to run the ball out because you're scared to give the ball back to them? You don't want to give the ball back? What are you scared of? It's not like he's moved the ball. So it just didn't make any sense to me. And then in the third quarter, they did score one touchdown, but other than that touchdown drive, the whole thing, I mean, it was just a frustrating game. And I think they will learn from this. I think that I think this was a big learning game. I don't think, like, when I saw the Titans game, I think that they shouldn't have been in it at the end. I think the Titans outplayed them the whole game. Mm-hmm. I think the Eagles, it was the complete polar opposite. I think the Eagles outplayed the Carolina Panthers the first, 47 to 50 minutes. And in that last 10, 12 minutes, it was all Carolina. Yeah,
we saw it last year, and that's where the Eagles won their games last year, is in those last 10 minutes. They took advantage of it. And I'd like to just say two final things in this regard. Doug was asked about it today in his press conference, that in his book, he said when he was watching, I mentioned this yesterday to Lou, that when he was watching the Jacksonville game, funny enough, that we're playing them this week in the AFC Championship last year, when they had 2 minutes left and they decided to take a knee. He did the exact same thing in this Carolina game. If you're going to preach go, go, go and be aggressive all the time, you can't be a hypocrite and you can't go back on what you said, you know? Like, if you're going to do it, practice what you preach and stay aggressive. If you trust your offense to, one, move the ball down the field, and you trust your defense, two, to stop them, why aren't you taking shots down the field there at the end of that first half, you know? That really drove me nuts. And I like to put it, in regards for scoring points, I think you said it perfectly with the New England Patriots and how they don't, even if they're up 20, 30 points, they'll still take shots. Compare it to, like, JUCO football. You know, I don't know if you're a fan of Last Chance U. It's on Netflix, but... Very good show. I suggest everybody check it out. But you see these teams that they want to get ranked and play for a JUCO national championship. They have to win by 60, 70 points. You have to have that mentality that no matter how many points you're up by, you want to be the best team and you want to show the league what you can do and make teams scared. Put fear into teams late in games. That's what you need to do. Carolina, they were not scared. They remained calm all game. They said, we're eventually going to figure it out, and that's what they did. And you have to have your hat off to Cam Newton for doing what he did for that whole coaching staff. They took advantage of an opportunity, something that the Philadelphia Eagles coaching staff didn't do. So we're going to move on to Jacksonville, and we'll get back to that coming up in our next segment. So come back real quick, our Eagles listeners.
Eagles fans, what's up? It's Louis DiBiase of Locked On Eagles once again. I want to talk to you guys right now about Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is an online event ticket marketplace that's dedicated to providing fans of live entertainment with experiences that last a lifetime. They helped get me down to my first regular season game last year, Monday Night Football, Eagles against Washington, and Carson Wentz had a day, probably the best I've ever seen him play, and I was there in person with my brother, a great experience that I'll remember for the rest of my life. With Vivid Seats, listeners can watch their favorite teams and artists perform in person. Vivid Seats helps fans find their seats to any of their favorite live events, including sports, concerts, and theater. Vivid Seats offers great prices and an easy purchasing experience. With the podcast code LOCKEDON, that's LOCKEDON, listeners can receive $20 off orders of $200 or more if they are a first-time customer with Vivid Seats. So say you're going down on a road trip to see the Eagles in New York or in Dallas or Washington, or look, maybe you're going to London to watch the Eagles play the Jaguars. It's going to be a pricey trip with planes and with hotels. So getting $20 off some tickets, that's a nice step. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Enter the promo code, again, LOCKEDON, to receive $20 off orders of $200 or more as a new customer of Vivid Seats. And all Vivid Seats confirmed orders are backed by a 100% guarantee. We thank Vivid Seats for sponsoring the Lockdown Eagles podcast today.
Welcome back to the Lockdown Eagles podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Gino Camilleri, joined by Tyler Steggy. Tyler, let's get into this matchup across the pond against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Two teams that made deep playoff runs last year, and two teams that same record this year, and they're not doing what nearly anybody expected them to do. I can tell you, I thought Jacksonville was going to straight out run away with that AFC South. I thought the Eagles were going to run away with the NFC East, but here we are, both teams meddling in mediocrity. So What are your first thoughts at this Jacksonville game?
Blake Bortles.
I think that's what everybody goes to immediately.
I think the beautiful thing about Jim Schwartz's defense is he owns quarterbacks who he should own. I think the crappy thing about his scheme is he gets torched by good quarterbacks. You saw it against Brady. You saw it 2 years ago against Green Bay when it was Carson Wentz's rookie year, actually. The defense is susceptible of getting shredded. That's why I didn't want to play the Rams in the postseason last year. I didn't want the Eagles to play the Saints either, because Drew Brees, Jared Goff, those are the two most talented quarterbacks. Then there's Matt Ryan. But side point. My point is this defense thrives against quarterbacks who hold the ball long. Blake Bortles holds the ball long. He can escape with his legs, and that is actually the one thing that I think is going to be frustrating and what you need to look for. That's my matchup that I'm looking for, is on third downs, Blake Bortles has a tendency to run the ball. And that's what's frustrating, is this defense, the defensive line can just fly upfield and it opens lanes. So I think that they're going to have to treat this just like you're playing a Marcus Mariota, just like you're playing a Cam Newton. You have to be able to close lanes and you have to stay disciplined, because there's nothing more frustrating than getting to a third and 15 and watching a quarterback run for a first down. But as far as an overall matchup, I do think that the Eagles offense matches up well too. This Jaguars defense is good. But I don't think it's as great as it was. The Cowboys just put up 40 points and their offense is nothing special. And the Eagles are somewhat built the same way. The only difference is the Eagles pass to open up their run. They do not run to open up the pass. And I think, I'm going on a tangent here. I have a lot that's just inside of me that I just need to relieve. Some people were critiquing Doug Peterson when he had the lead. They said, well, he passed 16 times and only ran the ball once. This offense needs a running back. When you lose LeGarrette Blount and you lose Jay Ajayi, and you're depending on Corey Clement and Wendell Smallwood, I love Corey Clement for being a transitional running back. He can be a guy that you can just give 10 to 12 touches a game. But when you're expecting him to find lanes on first and 10 when the box is loaded, that's not his type of game. And Wendell Smallwood, I don't even get me started. He's the most overrated player to this fan base right now. He's got like a 4.6 yard per carry and people think he's good. No, this O-line is really good at creating lanes, but Wendell Smallwood is not a very good running back. And I think people will start to see that once a real running back gets in here. But this team doesn't have a true running back that is a run between the tackles, can pick up 4, 5, 6 yards per carry when there's nothing there. But back to the matchup, I do love the matchup. I think you're going to see Jalen Ramsey follow Alshon Jeffrey around, and I think this is a game where Nelson Aguilar can have a game. And I think Zach Ertz can also have a game along with Dallas Goedert. You're going to have to play the methodical game again. I don't think there'll be many chances to go deep. But if there's any team to do it against, it is the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, I think you made really good points all around, and definitely the weak point of this Jacksonville team is their run defense right now. They're sitting at 27th with 853 yards allowed through these first couple games, which is a lot of points. When Philadelphia, they've only let up 600, which is very good because they're going to be without Leonard Fournette. Carlos Hyde is just coming into the system. T.J. Yeldon is a great player in his own right, but when you have an offensive line with the names, like, let me just read some of these names off to you. Norwell, Walker, Cann, Parnell, and Linder. Do any of those ring a bell? I don't think
so. Not to me. I've never heard of them.
Yeah, they're very beaten down on that offensive line. Their tackles have been hurt all season long. Blake Bortles has been under a ton of pressure. And when you have receivers, right now their best receiver arguably is Keelan Cole, who aren't world beaters, if you're going to have to hold onto the ball, this defensive line is going to have a day. And I think this is what makes this matchup better than the matchup against Carolina, is that I trust these corners against these wide receivers, not that I have total trust in the cornerbacks, but I have a decent amount against lesser receivers. We saw them do pretty well against Indy. So I do think that favors them in that right. The loss of Derek Barnett does hurt, but it helps when you have guys like Michael Bennett and Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham and Chris Long and Josh Sweat that could still get after the quarterback. Those are all solid guys. I think the defense matches up well against their offense. I don't trust Blake Bortles nearly ever. I think if he has to hold on to the ball for more than 2.5 seconds, they're going to have a lot of sacks this game. It's just our offense that really scares me this game because, like you said, this team isn't a run to open up the pass. They're a pass to open up the run. And Jacksonville, they're leading the league in total yards allowed via the pass. And they have a great...
Sorry.
No, go ahead. What were you
going
to say?
I'm going off your the Jacksonville offense. They are actually last in the league in pass yards per game.
Oh, yeah, so that's what I'm just saying. That's a favorable matchup in our regard.
Right. Yeah. So this defense, and I think another thing, one of the bigger differences, because people like to do this, right? The Eagles just won the Super Bowl, so it's easy to compare. You're like, hey, this isn't a championship team. They weren't doing this last year. Blah blah blah. While I do think there are a lot of similarities that people look over, the biggest difference, in my opinion, from the 2018 Eagles to the 2017 Eagles, is their turnover difference. They are last year they were fourth in the league in turnover difference with plus 11. This year they're negative 4. They had 31 total turnovers last year. This year they only have 6. So they're averaging just under 1 a game, and last year they averaged basically 2 per game. So they're not getting turnovers. They're not getting short field. And I think that also goes back to the time of possession thing. I don't know. I don't have the numbers for it. But how many times against the Panthers did you see the Eagles pinned in their own 5 or their own 10? Yeah, there's a few. It's a few times. And you see, and that's the thing. It's frustrating. Is it doesn't show up on stats because it's not gaining any points. But if this team is taking you from the 5-yard line and they're getting all the way to the opponent's 35, 40-yard line, or even the 25, and Jake Elliott misses a field goal, the offense did its job. There's no better team than methodically driving down the field than the Eagles, and the time of possession goes to that. So this matchup, I love the matchup against the Jaguars. It really just comes down to, can you get turnovers, and can you actually make Blake Bortles suck like he does? If you let him get into a rhythm and he drops back and he's doing these three and they're running drags and he's doing 3-step drops and just hitting it over the middle with easy completions, then by the second half and he's in a rhythm, then he's going to start making throws that you're not accustomed to seeing because Jim Schwartz let him. I hope and I pray that this defense has the same mentality it had against the Carolina Panthers and you see these corners playing up to the line because these receivers for the Jaguars aren't that great. Keelan Cole and I don't Dante Moncrief. D.D. Westbrook is a speedster, and that would be the one that would scare me downfield, and also for the notorious double move. But I mean, like you said, this team is just not very good, and they have a below average quarterback. So the Eagles, I'm hoping this is a Fletcher Cox game where he has 2 or 3 sacks, or Brandon Graham, or somebody, even Michael Bennett, because like you said, their offensive line can't protect him, and he holds the ball long too.
Yeah, I think this is the game that Jim didn't really blitz that much last game, but I think this game you have that ability because 100%. I don't think these receivers are going to be able to get open fast enough, so why not send some pressure? Why not get Blake Bortles rattled early? I was listening to the Sims and Lefko podcast today, and Chris Sims said that he could tell what kind of game Blake Bortles is going to have by the very first throw. If Bortles throws a wobbly ball, he throws off his back foot, it's going to be a long day. But if he can get into a rhythm, like you mentioned, it could be a very long day for this Eagles defense. And we all seen what that can do in the past. If these guys can just hit drag and curl routes like Tampa did with Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson all day long, they could throw for a couple hundred yards. And like you said, their passing offense is the worst in the league right now. But our pass defense isn't much better. So you have to take advantage of that in the trenches matchup and hit home with your front four. Send some exotic blitzes. Try something different because what they've been doing to date has not really worked. I love the defensive line, and it's really unfortunate that they don't have a playmaking cornerback that can get turnovers and that could be a ball hawk. I mean, they do with Rasul Douglas, but he's not on the field. But with what they have right now, it's just not happening. So you have to hope you can get some fumbles out of Blake Bortles and try and get some good field position, because on the other side of the football, Jalen Ramsey's going to be shadowing Alshon Jeffrey all day long. Tashawn Gibson is one of the best cover safeties against tight ends. I think he allowed Gronk to have 2 receptions for 15 yards, if I'm not mistaken, or that might have been against Travis Kelce, but he's done well. So these guys are going to have to step up. Like these intermediate playmakers like Nelson Agholor, you got to expect Dallas Goedert to get involved big this game. You'd hope Jordan Matthews has a pretty good game, because Alshon, I expect him to have a decent game against Jalen Ramsey. I think he's done a hell of a better job than he did in 2017. He looks a lot quicker off the line. He looks good in his breaks. He made James Bradbury look like he was wearing ice skates last game. I think he is coming into his own, but that Jacksonville defense, they have playmakers. They have ball hawks. They have the exact opposite of the Philadelphia Eagles. But like you said, this is a very methodical team. If you can wear them down, keep their defense on the field for an extended amount of time, they have big bodies on their defensive line. These guys can get tired. Marcel Darius, I live in Buffalo, so I watched him for the longest time. He doesn't have the best conditioning. If you can keep him on the field for 7 minutes each drive, that could be very good. But the thing that's going to kill them is, which one of these running backs is going to step up? I need to ask you this, because I talk to Lou about this all the time. Do you think Corey Clement is broken this year? What do you think is his problem? Because he just does not seem the same to me. I thought he was going to be that guy that stepped up and took them to the next level, but I just don't see it in him this year.
I think the biggest issue with Corey Clement is his vision. I don't think he sees lanes or potential lanes. I think you'll see like somebody like Ezekiel Elliott, you'll see him kind of like in Le'Veon Bell's like a dramatic example, because nobody runs like him. He'll kind of just sit at his offensive line and wait. But good running backs know when a hole is going to pop open. And I think that Corey Clement sees a hole and just hits it. And I think Wendell Smallwood is even worse at it, but I think Wendell Smallwood is much quicker, though. So I think that you'll see, that's why you always see him with 5, 6, 7 yard gains, but you never see Wendell Smallwood blow one open because he did it at West Virginia as well. He sees a lane and he hits it immediately, which I like. I like running back. It's almost like a Ryan Matthews in a sense, where you can, but
comparison.
They're not,
I can see that.
You see a lane, you hit it real quick, and it's good, but there's no potential like big runs. And I think that's the issue with Corey Clement. He's a little slower, but he also doesn't have that breakaway speed. And that's why I think he's a really good change of pace back, because he does everything pretty good. He can catch the ball, he can pass protect, he can run between the tackles, but he doesn't have breakaway speed. He's not going to make a ton of guys miss. He's not going to break a bunch of tackles. I think he's a good running back, but I think that his performance in the Super Bowl kind of left people overrating him in a sense. But I mean, I'm a Corey Clement fan. I think there's a role for him, but I don't think the current running back depth chart is. So sometimes you'll see with injuries, you see like if a role player gets hurt, then you're having a guy who's not accustomed to playing. He gets slid into that. that role of like just, you know, 10 or 12 snaps. And then if you see a star get hurt, you'll see that role player go into that star role, and they're just not built for it. And I think you're seeing that with Corey Clement. It was supposed to be Jay Ajayi. He was supposed to be the number one running back. And I think last game he would have. The Eagles O-line dominated the Carolina Panthers. And the fact that the Eagles as a team only average like 2.5 yards per carry is embarrassing. And that was my biggest like, we need somebody in here. And it doesn't take a lot. I'm not saying go and trade for Le'Veon Bell. You don't need a bona fide top five running back. But you do need a guy that can be the lead guy. Even if they got LeGarrette Blount Black or somebody of that nature, just somebody who can handle the load and get you in those second and twos, it changes the entire thing and it opens up the entire offense. And really quick, I had a question too, because I heard you say this. What is your opinion on Rasul Douglas? Do you think that he should be starting outside?
I am very, very, very high on Rasul Douglas. I love ball-hawking wide cornerbacks. I like guys that can make play on the ball because that's what you need. Even if you're breaking up a pass here and there and you're getting in the head of the wide receiver, you're still
there.
Contributing. Jalen Mills right. doesn't do that. When wide receivers mm-hmm. see Jalen Mills, they say, oh, we're going to have a day. You can see it in right. the statistics if you want to take a look at statistics. He's let up the most amount of pass yards in the NFL by any cornerback. Rasul Douglas needs to get on the field. He has all the physical traits to play as a safety, which I think right now, why is he not on the field as a safety? Avante Maddox does better in the slot, and Rasul Douglas played some safety at West Virginia, so why is he not getting plays? I think he should be personally. I don't know what is wrong with Jim Schwartz and why he won't get him on the field. Maybe they're looking at outside help at cornerback, but right now he should be on the field for the state that they're in. But before we get into moving parts and such, let's take one more break. When we get back, we'll do some final trade talk with Tyler, and we'll get a final prediction on the Jacksonville Jaguars game. Welcome back to the Locked On Eagles podcast. So right now, with our last few minutes, we are going to talk some trade here with Tyler. Tyler, we mentioned it prior to the break. Cornerback might be a place that we're looking. There was a report from Patrick Peterson today saying that he's going to stay in Arizona. So what names have you seen around the league that really interest you in that regard?
For corner specifically?
Corner, secondary, anything.
To me, in my opinion, I don't think that they need I like the idea of getting Patrick Peterson because he is a stud. But I don't think I saw potentially Gerrion Conley. But if he comes in, what is the difference between he and Sidney Jones? So like if Sidney Jones wasn't being slid outside, what is the role for a guy like Gerrion Conley if you do make a move? So like I said, I like the idea of moving for a number one corner, but outside of Patrick Peterson, who is apparently going to be on the block, I don't want to do one of those, like give up a fourth for a guy that could have a role. Cause what is that doing? I mean, I like a guy like Gerrion Conley because he's young, but I think that there's a lot of smoke around Howie Roseman and making moves, but once they fell out of the Patrick Peterson, trade, I think that they're going to look to move for a receiver or a running back, or maybe a safety. I could see Carl Joseph, maybe. I liked him. I do like him. He's got very good range, and I think he fits what the Eagles do on defense at in cover three. He could be a single high safety. And like you said about Avante Maddox, he's a better. I think he has filled that role, by the way, as well as he could for learning the job on the fly and being the last line of defense and being a single high safety, there is a lot of pressure. I think Rodney McLeod is somebody we took for granted a little bit. I always had said before he went down that he was probably the most replaceable player on the Eagles defense, and I'm kind of eating crow on that because I think that he did do so much that didn't show up in the stat sheet. He filled lanes. His ability to come down from being the deep high safety and come down and make a play in the run game, or make a deflection in the pass game. He's always around the ball. And not that Avante Maddox isn't doing that. It's just not at the level of Rodney McLeod. So I could see a move for a safety. I don't think that they're going to make a move for a corner. But I think the biggest need on this team is, as I mentioned earlier, would be receiver. I think that they need to make a move for a receiver.
I agree totally. I think that field stretching wide receiver is huge because if you're not going to hold teams late in games, you're just going to have to outscore people. Take the Rams formula, you know, just score 30 some odd points a game. So I'm going to throw out three names for you for field stretching wide receivers. I want you to rank them 1, 2, and 3, and then I'm going to do the same with running backs.
Might not all be
to the same caliber, but I'm going to toss them out there. So wide receivers, DeSean Jackson, Emmanuel Sanders, or Robbie Anderson. Rank those one, okay. 2, and 3 for me.
And obviously going into ranking is what we would have to give up, right?
Correct. Yeah, take that all into consideration.
I would probably, go Robbie Anderson, Deshaun, and Emmanuel, only because now if I'm ranking the player, Emmanuel Sanders is clearly the best receiver. Mm-hmm. And I love everything about, he's the best receiver in Denver. And I would take either of the Denver receivers, but I think that getting him would be tougher. I think the Broncos just are coming off a huge win on Thursday night last week. Right? They played last Thursday and they had a dominating win, right?
Yep. They killed Arizona.
Yeah, they killed Arizona. There it is. So I think that there's a little hope there, and the Eagles are kind of anxious to make a move. So if Denver gets blown out this week, then I could see them kind of being like, all right, let's clear house. But I think that getting Emmanuel would be kind of tough. Same with DeSean Jackson. I think that the price tag would be a little too high. I love DeSean Jackson. I think that people think that he's 32 and can't run. He can still be sought. He blew by Jalen Mills, which a lot of people can do, but he is always open downfield, and the attention that he creates, he's rarely single covered, and he basically always demands a safety over the top. So what does that do? That opens up everything for Zach Ertz, Nelson Aguilar, the run game. But Robbie Anderson, going back to him, he would be my number one on my list just because I don't think it would be that much to get him. And I think that he fits exactly what the Eagles need. That was the role for Mike Wallace. It was to get that attention, it was to get a safety over the top, to always have two safeties deep, and then that's where play actions get involved. Or if they have single coverage, like I said, you're not scheming into it. You're not doing a deep play action, and you're having Carson Wentz sit back there for 7 seconds, susceptible to a hit. These guys can get open, they're quick off the line, and they can beat one-on-one coverage in 2-3 seconds, and you could throw the ball deep to them. And all of those would be ideal. But going back to Emmanuel, is I think that a lot of his production is done from the slot. And so that is where I think it would be kind of tough for the Eagles to try and scheme, in a sense of like, where are you going to move him and Nelson Aguilar, and who's going to be your actual deep threat? I think that he would be a really good receiver in this offense. Obviously, I just don't think that he fits what the Eagles need exactly. I think he's more of a chain mover and a guy. I'm not saying he can't stretch the field, but I think his specialty is getting his medium routes and his short routes rather than his deep routes like DeSean and Robbie.
I agree with all those. I think Robbie Anderson would be a nice, cheap addition. He does play that role well there. You've seen it in the past. DeSean, I wouldn't mind. People say he's falling off. I don't see it. I still think he fits that role very well. Emmanuel Sanders fits that role as well, but he does have a big cap hit next year, so that could kind of kill it. But running back, real quick, very quick, LeSean McCoy or Le'Veon Bell, who do you think is the more realistic option?
I have no idea what's going on with the Le'Veon Bell situation. So I'll just naturally say LeSean McCoy. I know that Howie Roseman loves him. He's from Philly. It makes sense. I don't know. It's hard to comment on the Le'Veon Bell situation, because there's some people who say that the Eagles are like Jason LaCanfora, who, by the way, I mean, there's some people that we pay attention to and some people we don't. Jason LaCanfora, I have never seen him say, hey, this is speculated. And then like a week later, it actually happened.
I know.
Like, I feel like he just tosses so much crap against the wall. And like, I mean, he's respected. I'm not hating on the guy, but I think that people fall into this, like, you know, oh, what I'm hearing and this and that. I think the Eagles called probably like 15 teams and they've been discussing names, but I don't think that there's like, and the reason I brought up his name is he keeps saying that the Eagles are highly interested in Le'Veon Bell. But then you hear from Adam Schefter, who I respect way more and I trust way more, him say that it's not going to happen and the Eagles aren't that interested. Mm-hmm. So it's like, but I do think that the interest in LeSean McCoy was legit, but I also think that the Bills, I don't know, these teams stay bad for a reason, because they have bad ownership. I mean, even when Patrick Peterson said that he wanted to be traded, the owner or the team came out and said, we're not trading him. It's like, well, why are you going to hold on when you can get valuable picks for your rebuild? And right. It's the same thing for LeSean McCoy. It's like, why are you guys demanding such a high price when you know you're not going to get it? So let's say you hypothetically do keep LeSean McCoy. What is he going to do for your rebuild? It doesn't make any sense. Somebody, and I'm not trying to be on my high horse saying I can run a team, but I hate when people are like, oh, well, you're a Twitter GM. It's like, no, but there are some dumbasses in this league that make stupid decisions. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying I can be better, but I'm saying that I wouldn't be this dumb. Like,
I agree.
I don't know. I mean, but to answer your question, I would rank LeSean McCoy simply because I think it's a more realistic option. But getting Le'Veon, it's just so tricky because you have to figure out what picks you're giving, and then you have to worry about a contract. So it's like you're giving up picks for a free agent almost. And I know there can be like conditional picks, like, oh, if he doesn't re-sign, you get a third back or a fourth back. Mm-hmm. I get all that. It's just it's a tricky situation.
Definitely. Yeah, I think you made great points there, Tyler. And I think this was a good chat we had. Real quick, let me get your game prediction score-wise for Sunday.
I'll go Birds 27-13.
I think that's a good score. I was going to say 24-10. I think the Eagles come out on top. I think this is a game that the better team is going to come out on top. I think they have it in the tank. And Tyler, let's hope so. Let's hope these Eagles fly high on Sunday. Thank you for joining us, my friend. Hopefully we can get you back on the show very soon. It was a pleasure talking to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, have a good one, Tyler, and fly, Eagles, fly.